Welcome to the show, Je Savais Pas. I'm your host, Esther Tyree, and in the studio with me this evening is Pat Mould and Barry Ancelet, going to talk about some fun things happening this weekend at Festival Acadien. So if you haven't made plans to get out there, go and do it. Also, to remind you that it is KRVS Fundraiser Month, so please go to the website and click on the donate button, and then at the end of the month, you can call in and do it over the phone. So welcome, Barry and Pat. Thank you. Barry, you're a surprise guest. I wasn't expecting that, but that's kind of cool.
Oh, well, good. That's not always the reaction I get.
Yeah, I figured I'd drag him along. We were out at Girard Park doing some logistical walkthroughs. Yeah.
Setting up tent spots and stuff like that.
Tent spots and trying to figure out where we're going to get more shade for the people that are coming. And a lot
of people just show up to the festival and think, oh, how nice. This got put up.
Yeah, right. Not a lot of people know the behind-the-scenes footwork. So we're going to talk about the two kind of fun things that are happening other than all the music and the fact that it's in an open field and I get to run around barefoot.
And by the way, it was like something like 65 or 68 bands playing during the weekend.
Oh, well, I think it's north of 70.
Yeah, 70.
Wow. So yeah. Go to the website and look at the schedule. But it's the Atelier. Did I pronounce that right?
Mm-hmm.
The Atelier stage and the Culture sur la Table. So you get to have your fill of edible art and audible art.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
So what shall we talk about first?
Probably
the... You're making me
hungry. Well, yeah, the Côte de la Table, which is probably the newest of the two areas, I guess back, probably 2009, 2010, we decided to add the chef's demonstration stage. I mean, you know, here we are in a hotbed of... food and we decided that we wanted to showcase.
Yeah, it is Festival Acadien.
Yeah,
there's a lot more than Ecreole. It's a lot more than music and
also we've had the food festival for a long time.
Yeah,
but we weren't focusing on the eating of the stuff, but not on the making of the
right.
stuff.
And so, like Barry said, the Bayou Food Festival has been in existence almost as long as the festival, and out at the park since
77.
Yeah. And so we...
Oh, at the park?
Yeah.
About 80.
Yeah, it used to be over at the...
This festival's been, you know, evolving over the years for a long time.
Well, we took it over in 2007 from Lafayette J.C.'s, who had ran it for decades, and formed a new nonprofit, and we started expanding the offerings, you know. The first year, as a matter of fact, the first year we took it over in 2008, I'll tell you, we opened up... the dance hall tent, the Côte de la Table, and we brought back the children's area. Mm-hmm. The following year, we added the Louisiana sports tent. We have our third open-air stage we added a couple of years ago, the anniversary, San Anniversaire.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be at the on the grounds at the A. Hayes Townhome at the Paul and Lulu Hilliard University Art Museum, and that's going to be we've really expanded that area. It's going to have a full slate of bands.
And by the way, just en passant, if you get a chance, go and see the musical instruments exhibit that's in there. It's unbelievable.
Yes. And pull up last week's show if you didn't listen to it, because Anya and Chris were the guests, and they talk about curating that show.
They did an amazing job. We took a first look at this.
Somebody's phone is...
Oh, that's what it is. I was wondering, what is that? It's my phone. Sorry, folks.
Somebody took a... we took a first look at this back in the 80s, and, you know, people making instruments around here.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had paid particular attention to it since then. So I just suggested to Anya and Chris, you know, take another look and see what's happened. So lots has happened since then. So they incorporated some of the historical stuff we knew, but... they discovered a lot of other things. I mean, you know, people making guitars and steel guitars and amplifiers and just everything. It's just
and of course
really
fiddles and accordions. Yeah. Each room has its own instrument. There's a percussion room. There's a guitar room. There's a fiddle room. There's an accordion room. So it's just and a lot of the stuff that's happening over there at the A. Hayes Townhome is also tied directly back to the symposium that's going to be happening at Vermillionville.
Yeah, that happened earlier today.
Yeah, that happened earlier today. You're right. And also back to the Atelier stage, which is where we're going to have a lot of the luthiers.
Which is why I wanted to have y'all to come in today and talk about that sort of segue from that show last week that talked about the crafting the South Louisiana Sound and then, you know, segueing into Festival Acadiana Creole and how it all fits together.
Some discussion at the Atelier stage. So the Atelier stage is actually kind of grew out of Pat's interview workshop stage that eventually evolved into the Heritage stage. And so we decided we needed a small, you know, intimate space where people could hear musicians and other people speaking one-on-one and, mm-hmm. and have a sense that you were, you know, have involved in a dialogue with some interesting performers who happened to be at the festival. And so this year we always tailor it to kind of to discuss a lot of what's going on in the theme of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we're going to have several instrument makers and talk about, you know, how they learned and what, you know, what they had in mind when they started doing this. Including, you know, some fiddle makers, Matthew Duse and Anya and Ed Poulard,
mm-hmm.
and Chris Segura, some guitar players, Sam Broussard, Roddy Romero, and Sonny Landers talking about some of the mm-hmm. stuff that's happening around here.
And using one of the amps that Sam is a real big fan of, Jason Harrington's amps,
mm-hmm.
and so he'll have one of his amps there. So we'll tie back to the, you know, the making of or crafting of the South Louisiana Sound.
And we also talk about some of the people who have basically completely reinvented the diatonic accordion. You know, the best – it's generally acknowledged that the mm-hmm. best diatonic accordion in the world today is made in South Louisiana. You know.
Wow.
30 out of the
That's
30 –
That's really cool.
30 out of the 30 top diatonic accordions in the world today are made here. And and part of that has a lot to do with the fact that Marc Savoy, way mm-hmm. back a long time ago, applied his engineering training
mm-hmm.
and his interest as a musician to play this contraption.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the instrument he was playing, which was one of those old German imports,
mm-hmm.
couldn't keep up with him. You know, he was playing it faster and demanding more
yeah.
sound and more –
His technique had gone beyond what the instrument was able to,
exactly.
to do.
Exactly. So he started thinking, okay, how could I make this thing able to do what I need – what I'm asking it to do? And he realized that he needed to open it up and look at the insides, and he just completely reinvented the insides. And very interestingly, he's been very, very generous at sharing his – discoveries with a whole several generations of accordion makers,
mm-hmm.
You know, from Tina Pellioni, who works mm-hmm. with him in his shop, to Moisey Baudouin, to anybody who goes over there, he'll tell you, you know, look, you can get the best bellows from here, or this, or you can make this little piece this way, or, you know, he's been very, very generous.
So and, will he be talking about that? I mean,
well,
is he going to
well,
talk?
Well, we have Randy Falcon Jr. Martin coming in, to do that that reinventing the accordion workshop from 12:45 to 1:45 on Saturday.
We're still trying to rein Mark in. He's a little shy about talking about it, oddly enough, because he's the one who really, you know, launched this whole thing.
Right.
But he's a little shy about talking about it. But anyway, a lot of people who learn from him are going to be there to talk about it too. And
okay.
Randy Falcon, by the way, who watching Wayne Toups play one night and saw that Wayne had to change accordions in the middle of the song to modulate to a different key.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, there's got to be a better way to do that. And so he invented this accordion where you could change the keys by changing the stops without changing the accordion in the middle of the song.
Wow.
So he's going to be there. And, you know, that accordion has become sort of iconic. A lot of musicians
yeah.
play it because it's so versatile. And some of these things, you know, a long time ago, the German imports were made with, you know, fairly inexpensive wood, pine or something,
mm-hmm.
and they were painted black and lacquered. And so all of musicians back in the 40s and 50s, you know, they were remembering these those accordions were so much better than the you know, the ones that had been imported before. The Monarchs and the Sterlings were so much better
mm-hmm.
than the ones that had been, so that everybody wanted one of those little black ones. You know, they call them les petites noires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want one of those little black mm-hmm. ones. Well, everybody had this notion that these little black accordions, these, you know, were so much better. Well, when people started making them here, Marc Savoy, mm-hmm. for one, was aware of guitar makers and violin makers. And so he's thinking, well, if what you're asking if the wood part of this is contributing to the resonance of the instrument, why wouldn't you use a really good wood, like on
right.
a fiddle, right?
Right.
Like maple or something, right? Mm-hmm. And so he starts making his accordions out of some really fine curly maple and bird's eye maple and really nice wood. Why would you paint that black? And of course you wouldn't.
Yeah, right.
So he was varnishing it and lacquering it and stuff and letting the natural wood. Well, people around here said, no, man, I want a black one. I want a black one. He was driving him nuts. Why would you want a black one when I'm offering you this gorgeous
right.
bird's eye work? So in typical Marc Savoie fashion,
I can only imagine.
He's using food coloring. He made a series of pinkish ones and light blue ones and light green ones, but you could still see the wood grain through it, right?
Uh-huh.
And so he just started making fun of the black thing. And one day I went to his shop and he says, hey, you got to come see this. He said, look at the new accordion I just made. And he points it. It was black.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought,
ooh.
What? You made a black? I mean, your whole thing was never making a black. He said, go take a look close. I went close, and it was ebony. But all that to say, that's the kind of creative,
yeah.
innovative, artistic consideration that has been, you know, plowed into this whole affair.
Well, yeah. And Barry and I have been having this conversation for years now, and this, I think this theme and this gathering of craftsmanship is indicative of how we think here in Southwest mm-hmm. Louisiana. Barry and I have had this conversation about, for like I said, literally years about how, you know, inventive and Cajuns see a problem and they try to come up with a solution. And I think you can go all through the oil field and
oh,
see
yes.
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Some welder sitting on the back of, yeah. of a dredge and say, man, if that thing opened this way instead of this way, it would
right.
work better.
You know, the best example is the hole in the crawfish table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one guy said, you know, I wish I'd have thought of that, you know.
Right.
It's like, you know, the hole in the middle of a crawfish table. Come on, it's that simple. So there's this there's this simplicity, but there's also this.
Have you ever seen any of these cooking contraptions that are mounted on the back of a dually?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after Katrina, when all those people started showing up at the Cajun Dome, those mm-hmm. those evacuees mm-hmm. that they were putting up at the Cajun, the word went out that there were thousands of people in the Cajun Dome. The next morning, every kind of cooking contraption on a trailer was
at the Cajun
Dome. Those people over there, we got to feed them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, this sort of mindset is pervasive through our culture. It's indicative of our culture and mm-hmm. how we look at things from a practicality standpoint, but also there's an artistic quality to
Absolutely.
It as well.
Yeah.
You know, the craftsmanship of these instruments are just
mind
blowing.
There's an amazing conceptual ability.
Yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
you often hear think outside the box. What people here are not aware there is a box.
Right.
There's no box.
There's no box.
Everything's available. You know.
So, you know, again.
Look, for example, Milton Gilbo's
right.
steel guitars.
I was about to talk about the steel guitars.
Milton Gilbo's steel guitars. He worked at Coburn Plumbing Supply, so he noticed that the flushers and the knobs
and
make perfect, you know, would work perfect on a steel guitar.
So he made a steel guitar out of plumbing parts.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and he put the Coburn. Oh, we shouldn't be saying, but if you put the a logo on it anyway.
Hey, one man's treasure.
I know.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
But it's a beautiful, if you go to the exhibit and see it, it's gorgeous. It is unbelievably gorgeous. And there's mm-hmm. another one in there. I think there's two of his in there.
Yeah, one of them's on a 2x4.
Yeah. It's, they're,
on a 2x4?
They're just amazing pieces of art,
And then,
Well, that's like Jay who takes, well, said that the T-Fairs came from the hay rakes that
right.
weren't usable anymore.
Right.
They took the tines and turned them into a musical instrument.
Right. And I have one of Don Montesay's. It's one of my most treasured things.
It's the Stradivari of triangles.
Triangles, yeah, exactly. But, you know, we have a steel guitar workshop on a Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Kyle Huval in particular, Mr. Milton Gilbo is going to be there. And then we have the Fiddle Kings that are going to be hosted by Steve Riley. So we have a bunch of fiddlers coming in. At 2 to 3 on Sunday, there's going to be a discussion about the Falcons and the Bros with Mr. Wade Falcon that Barry's going to moderate.
By the way, that's an interesting topic. Wade Falcon is a descendant of Joseph and Cleoma Falcon, who was the first to record 1928 on Lonesville Lafayette. And he just got interested in collecting all of the recordings, those old 78s, that the Falcons and Cleoma's brothers, the Bros, recorded. I think he's up to about something like 78 or 80.
Wow.
He gathered them all. And it's only until you get them all together and then listen to them and draw back and say, oh, my God, what is this?
You know? Yeah.
And one of the things that blew me off my chair, he asked me to do the transcriptions for him so that we would know what they were singing as well. And I was listening to these thinking, oh, my God, they were the first ones to record versions of what became standards for other people later, like Ira LeJeune and Lawrence Walker and, everybody. So he's going to be there to discuss that amazing project.
And then we have Kubion. We have a couple of bands also that are going to be scheduled at the Atelier stage on Saturday, 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Saturday we have Jason Fry and Lon Yapa going to close down the stage. And then we have Kubion is going to play from 3:15 to 4:15. And then we're going to finish up with some ballads and jurés.
Yeah, so what's the ballads and jurés with Cedric Watson, Christy Guillory, and Megan Brown? What's that?
It's unaccompanied singing, story songs and play party songs and it's really fascinating, you know, stuff that people used to hear routinely back 100 years ago, this is really one of the only opportunities.
And the ballads come from the Cajun side of the culture, and the jurés come from the Creole side. Jurés were old African songs that were passed down from generation to generation. So it's really an interesting.
And let's not forget First on Saturday.
Right. I was just going to bring that up, that there's storytelling.
Yeah.
So is that going to be like folklore of the French and
We have Mitch Reed, Bill Matthews, Jim Phillips, and this guy by the name of Barry Onsalay.
Yeah, who's that?
I don't know who that guy
name.
Is. I know.
He's just straight up lying.
Yeah, right. They're really good at lying, these guys. But they're going to be getting together and telling stories and lies.
This is a test drive for a show that we're going to be doing at the ACA in February. We're just going to get together and tell stories, and some of them are true, and some of them are kind of true, and some of them are straight
up
fiction. Yeah.
Most of them are all embellished, Esther. Basically.
So then, is there going to be an option for people to say that's true, that's embellished, that's just like putting kale in my gumbo?
Well, the title, the title of our February show is "And This Is No Damn Lie." So. Mitch and I, this grew out of something that kept happening in airports. Mitch was traveling with Beausoleil, and every once in a while we would cross in the Atlanta airport or the Houston airport or somewhere, and we would start telling these stories that Mitch's uncles or great uncles used to tell, the Pascal stories. And I had recorded them extensively back in the 70s, so I knew a lot of those stories too, and the strategy for coming up with them. These guys would tell these amazing fabulations that they made up on the spot.
Wow.
And they would go on and on.
A lot of times.
The more they went on, the better they got.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times, at the end of a story, somebody would say, the time that they would tell a story about drying the Gulf to plant rice. And somebody said, damn, drawing a Gulf to plant rice is the first time I hear that. And the storyteller would say, me too. Just made it up. So Mitch and I would get together, and we were in the lobby, in the walkway at the airport.
Yeah.
And we'd start telling these stories, and the band would come up, and other people would listen. And somebody said, y'all need to do this on purpose, man. So we did one at the Cité des Arts one night. Bill and Jim is the one who actually organizes, and Jim brought in Bill Matthews, who's an amazing storyteller as well. And we noticed that the four of us, that just like a little synergy gets going, so we'll see what happens.
Y'all gonna be able to clear out at 12:30?
Well, there's that.
Right, could keep going.
So that's the Atelier stage.
Yeah.
Go by and see that. And there's
we'll take up some of Mark's time.
Yeah, right.
There's gonna be out and about, there'll be a schedule for the different stages that mm-hmm. people correct. Will be able to find at the festival, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, getting back to the story, you know, some of them are fabulations, like Drawing the Gulf to Print Rice, but others are based on reality. And what's funny about them mm-hmm. is that they're actually true.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first time Nathan Abshire tasted a pizza. He didn't know what that was.
I know. In D.C., in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C., at Georgetown University.
I know. It's hilarious. Don't give it away because it is the funny. I mean, every time I just crack up every time I hear that story.
Yeah.
It's just so Kai Jank.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's so – I can see him doing what Barry says he did. And it's like it doesn't shock me one bit that that's what he decided to do it. And he does it all in his underwear. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Now,
I was going to say most of my listening audience goes to the website after it airs because we're going to air late. But still, that if they do Friday, then that kind of gives them a preview of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to be your fill of audible art at the Atelier stage. Mm. So let's move to edible art at the Culture sur la Table.
Yeah. Colt Patin, who is a chef, is a local guy, lives in the Brobridge-Arnoldville area. And he's a well-known chef in this area, and he's kind of taken that whole Culture sur la Table by the horns
mm-hmm.
and is really, for the last few years, has really massaged it. I kind of, you know...
Are there going to be referees for the jambalaya versus paella?
Yeah, right, exactly. No, those guys are on their own, man. That's one weekend out of the year. I don't have anything to do with food, and I steer clear because Colt does a great job. He's a chef instructor at the Louisiana Culinary Institute in Baton Rouge, and he... has turned this kind of in, and he's really interesting in what he's done. He's turned it almost into a culinary education platform
mm-hmm.
where he attacks things like jambalaya versus paella. He does a Cajun cooking and beer pairing. He does, you know, traditional boudin creative uses of boudin. And
I remember one year he did the consequences of tomatoes.
Yeah, right. It's horrible. It was the inhumanity of it. But so he tries to really break down certain aspects of our culinary arts around here and puts an educational spin on it. But it's far from boring, and you get to taste. I'm sure you'll be able to taste a jambalaya and a paella and make mm-hmm. your own determination. But actually, you know, jambalaya, a lot of people believe, is a spinoff of an African dish called jollof,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was basically black-eyed peas and okra and rice and rice mixture. So, you know, there should be jambalaya versus paella versus jollof. But,
exactly.
You know, so... And then there's a whole host of chefs.
The similarity ends with rice.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, and by the way, this plays into the nature of our festival, too, which is a Cajun and Creole culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, the distinctness, but also how they influenced each other and fused in so many ways, musically, in food, mm-hmm. and, you know.
So there's going to be – Colt's going to be doing an alligator sauce pecan on Sunday. We got Jacob Hamilton coming. There's a whole great list of chefs. You can go to the website and
Where else could you do that? It would take you 2 or 3 weeks to go to all those restaurants
yeah.
and here they're, you know.
Yeah,
and then we have at least 25, maybe more, of some of the best restaurants in Acadiana at the Bayou Food Festival. Some of those guys have been with us for 30 years. You know, they just come back every year. And
when I say they put their best foot forward, I mean, you know, there's 25 or 30 of them. So if they can, you know, they compete, they have to come across with the goods. And,
right.
And man, mm-hmm. I don't know of another festival where you can eat as well.
Trust me, I've been to a lot of them, and this is what – and I'm not just saying this because I'm prejudiced in any kind of way, but it is some of the best food you're going to find at any festival in the state, let alone the country. And I think, you know, that's the other thing I'd like to just mention about this festival. You know, it has a following, an international following. You
mm-hmm.
know, there's people that come from every state in the union. And one year we documented, in 2013, we documented 12 to 13 countries that people had traveled from. You know, Canada,
wow.
France,
yeah.
Switzerland, Haiti. The list, you know, the list went on and on. And so... we're proud of that, the fact that we have such a huge, diverse audience, but also
mm-hmm.
the locals. You know, it's an opportunity, and we've always said this, Barry and I, that it's an opportunity for us to celebrate who we are,
yeah.
how we eat, how we dance, how we sing, how we have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a self-celebration of who we are, and people want to come and be a part of that.
Absolutely. And it's usually at a pretty decent time of year, too. The weather, hopefully, you know, will stay.
Slacking up a little bit, yeah.
Will stay decent.
Well, we
I'm going to have to show up at the traditional Boudin and Creative Uses and pitch my idea for a Cajun corn dog. We had a slew on Facebook. Somebody said something about Boudin on a stick. I said, dude, dip that thing in cornbread and call it a Cajun corn dog.
That's it. I mean, hey.
Hey, that's a creative use.
Yeah, I know, but some of them, I don't know, man. I'm still not a believer in the king cake concept. I'm sorry.
No,
I draw,
no.
Yeah,
no.
I draw the line there. But, you know, so again, there's all these aspects of, you know, and I guess, and Barry being a professor, it's kind of evolved naturally, this whole educational process that we have going on too,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But it's based on a concept that we sort of identified decades ago.
Right.
It was called guerrilla academics,
yeah.
where you sneak information to people
right.
when you're giving them a good time at the same
oh,
time.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I do that a lot in my teaching. I'm teaching kids games, and mm-hmm. they don't realize that they're learning a whole bunch mm-hmm. of information that they need to know later on down the road.
One of the best examples of that, by the way, I remember it was in 82. We were celebrating the tricentennial of the founding of Louisiana,
uh-huh.
and I just happened, among other things, I happened to bring in a rah-rah band. You know, Haitian rah-rah.
Oh, right.
And I had them playing right before the Ardwans.
Right.
And so, you know, like they came up and the Ardwans came up and you could hear people in the crowd going, oh, wow, man.
Yeah.
We didn't have to say it. We didn't have to beat it over the head. It was – there it was.
Right.
You know, just by programming those two things together, people went, oh, wow,
yeah.
there's a connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. That's the best way to get – to get people, get them out while they're having fun, and then just kind of say, hey, you know, this is what – let them sort of connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. But I love it that y'all are doing that because, one, you said that, but, two, people, as you said, mentioned Pat, are coming from all over the world, and what a great way to experience the culture but then learn about the history of it, which
yeah.
helps you appreciate the culture a whole lot more
and
as well.
And we're not even charging them tuition.
No.
Or admission.
I know Anya mentioned last week with all of her research, everything. She goes, I call it my personal research project. So you should collate all that and send it off and ask for a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we appreciate y'all being in here tonight, Pat and Barry. Thanks a lot. And we look forward to seeing
pleasure.
You out and about at festival. And listeners, get out and go to the atelier stage and the sur la table. What is it?
Côte sur la table.
Côte sur la table. But you've been listening to Je Savais Pas, a production of KRBS brought to you as a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, which joins you in support of this station. This is KRBS 88.7 FM Lafayette and Lake Charles and online at KRBS.org. I'm your host, Esther Tyree. Thank you again, Pat and Barry, and good night.
Enjoy Zydeco Blues and Old School R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.